This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Bamidbar, which of course introduces us to the book of Bamidbar. And we of course jump in right away reading Bamidbar Sinai Be'ol Moed. The Medrash notes that the Torah was given in Midbar Sinai with fire and water, with Esh and Mayim, to teach us that just like these three things are free to all, the desert, the fire, and the water, Torah too is free to all. And so the Medrash then adds that one must make himself free as a desert in order to receive the Torah. It sounds as if there is an exchange rate for Torah, that one needs to become like the desert in order to receive it. How does that supposed to make any sense to us? So the Sfasemes explains that anyone can learn Torah for free, but in order to acquire Torah and make it part of one's existence, one must first unburden himself from extraneous matters. Rav Goldbach Zatzal, the Rosh Yeshiva of Keren B'Yavneh, explained that while one fulfills the requirement of Torah study by having set times for Torah study, the fact of the matter is that one only acquires Torah by going beyond, by taking it steps beyond. In order to wear the crown of Torah, you need to line it up and make it to a part of who you are without those boundaries of time. The chief rabbi, Rav Yitzchak Yosef Shlita, the Rishon LeZion, added that this is why the desert, as opposed to mountains and valleys, is used in the imagery. A mountain and a valley, says Rav Yitzchak Yosef Shlita, both have limits to their identities, but deserts seem vast and endless, and the same is true for Torah. The Torah, too, is vast and endless, and we need to understand that in order for us to be able to appreciate the great gift that is the Torah. The bulk of the parasha does spend a lot of time taking us through a lot of the imagery of the census, l'mishpachosam, l'beis avosam, and why does the Torah have to be so lengthy to repeat the same formula for each shevet over and over again? And why does it have to give the sum total at the end? So Rashi writes at the beginning of Parsha Shmos that Klal Yisrael is compared to the stars, about which the pasuk says, "Hamotzi b'mispar tzvam l'chulam b'shem yikra," that Hashem brings forth the hosts by number; He calls each of them by name. And there are billions of stars in the universe, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how to call each one by its own name because each one has a specific purpose. And the same is true with Klal Yisrael. Every Jew has a special name because each one has a unique role to play in the world. Rav Yochum Konigsberg Shlita added that the sum total, the mispar of all B'nai Yisrael, demonstrates that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, because when all the individuals of Klal Yisrael join together, they can accomplish so much more as a complete and total community. We're also told that Eliasaph ben Deuel was one of the Nesiim for the tribe of Gad. And later he's not referred to as Eliasaph ben Deuel, but rather he's referred to as Eliasaph ben Reuel. Why the change of his name? So the Sefer Tal Oros learns a valuable lesson here. If a person works hard to get people to know Hashem Deukel, then he will also be a merit to be a Rea of Hashem Reu, or Reo Kel. And that's one of the lessons and the hint in this week's Parsha. We're then told, Eila Pakudim, these are the people who are counted by Moshe Aaron and the Nisim. And the Ramban asks why we need to know the entire count was necessary. We understand why there was a need for each member of Klal Yisrael to know his place, but why the count and the total? So Rav Salavitchik Zatzal noted that there are two types of counting: to know a sum, and also to make sure that everyone's accounted for. Well, in the first, knowing the sum, we need the total. In the latter, each person makes a difference. And here, in our census at the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, Rav Salavitchik explains that Moshe was taking on the role of Rabban Shel Yisrael. And as a result, he needed to teach each and every member of Klal Yisrael. And in order to do so, he needs to know each one by a name, which is a point the Ramban makes as well. And so therefore, he needs to be able to know each one's name in order to pray for each one's success, just like a good Rebbe would. And perhaps that's why the census is introduced with the word Se'u. We're making it clear that the call is made up in each and every individual, and that each and every individual counts. This is a fundamental. Ba'leviim l'matei avosam. And we're also told that the Leviim were not included in the number. And the Sefer Tam Vadas points out that in the previous census, the total numbered 603,550. And this time, at the beginning of Bamidbar, again, the number is 603,550. The only difference between the two was that Shevet Levi isn't included. In other words, the birth rate of Klal Yisrael was enough to cover the gap when we remove Shevet Levi from the picture. And Rav Shimshon David Pinkus Zatzal comments that this teaches us an important lesson, that when we separate a group in Klal Yisrael to serve Hashem, it doesn't come as a cost to the Yotzei Tzava, the size of the army. Hashem fills in the gap, the quantity and the quality of the soldier, and that's kind of important for us to become quite aware of. Maybe that's one of the lessons we need to put into our lives as well. I think that's one of the things that becomes a major discussion for us in our world today. Maybe that's something that our world leaders and Torah leaders need to be aware of and convince the rest of the people of Am Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael as well. We're told Vayamas Nadav Avihu that Nadav and Avihu died, but why does the Torah use the singular Vayamas instead of the more correct Vayamusu? So the Chasam Sofer noted that the Medrash lists a number of possible sins that Nadav and Avihu did for which they lost their lives, and one listed is that they didn't speak to one another for advice. However, says the Chasam Sofer, that's odd, because there's no Avera in not taking advice from a peer. So the Chasam Sofer concludes that this isn't a sin, it's a fact. Had they spoken out their logic to the other issues with one another, they would have discovered the mistakes in their actions and they wouldn't have come to sin. Rabbi Tzal Rudinsky Shlita suggests that the same can be said here. Each person died as an individual, for had they spoken with one another, they wouldn't have died. And that's a lesson that we need to consider as well. We're also told, B'shamer Wes Mishmarto, the Levi, has a responsibility to observe his Mishmeres. And the Rambam in Hilchos Kli HaMikdash Perek Gimel Halacha Aleph notes that serving as a Levi is not a choice, it's an obligation. Rav Amital Zatzal from Har Etzion explained that this coercion has a function and a purpose. The inculcation of the concept of discipline and coercion in divine service is that purpose. Through this command to the Levium, who both symbolize the entire nation, the rest of the nation observes and learns the importance of the concept. The obedience out of coercion and out of love were guiding principles of two radical phenomena which we witness even in our own century. On the one hand, the communist regime, which ruled by pure coercion, authoritarianism, suppression of the people, and that eventually collapses. But on the other hand, the Western concept of total freedom, which is also on its way to bankruptcy. And Am Yisrael and Jewish philosophy need to create a balance between those two paths, and therefore, V'shamer Wes Mishmarto, the Levi, also has to help us find it. Finally, in this week's Haftorah, which comes from the book of Hosea, we're told, Bayomahu, on that day, you should call me Tikri Ishi, Velo Sikri Li Od Baili. You'll call me Ishi, not Baili. And Rav Shechter Shalita would regularly remind us that there's a deep connection between the Haftorah and the laning based on this pasuk. And what's the difference between Ishi and Baili? So the Gemara in Ksuvos explains that Ishi means fully married, and Baili means betrothed, and still living in her father's house. And Rabbi Yeruchim Perlow explains, quite honestly, that while we were in the desert, our relationship was like an arusa. Someone was betrothed, but still living in her father's home. But when we have the status of arusa, we don't have a right to look at the aron, as is clear in the parsha. And that's why when the aron was getting ready to be carried, it had to be taken down and covered before the rest of the kelim could be moved. When the Beis HaMikdash was built, then we got the status of nesua, being fully married. And we were entitled to look at the aron, as we find that the Levium would the Kohanim would lift up the paroches, and they would say, Ruchi Baskam Lifnei Amakom. The Mishnah HaMelech suggests that we might have thought that after two rounds of exile, we could never restore our status of Nesua. And this pasuk is teaching us that when the third Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, we'll have the status of Nesua, and as such, we will once again have the ability to look at the aron. And may HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant that opportunity to us, B'mheira V'yameinu, where we will not only talk about the Chag HaShavuos, we will be ready to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here we are, right? That we are here, and we are here to bring and follow all Chovoseinu, to Midim Chesidram, Musafim Keochasam, may it take place speedily in our days, and have a Shabbat Shalom and a Chag Sameach to all.